Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Second Act Actors. I'm your host, Dr. Jana McMorty, and I'm still a medical doctor simultaneously trying to pursue a career in acting. My guest this week is Anne Alexander Cedar. Anne is an actor based in Germany. She's from the States. She's also a screenwriter and a coach. And oh my goodness, we have such an incredible conversation. We talk about so many things together. We talk about, stereotyping in the industry. We talk about AI. We talk about, she has a podcast called Act Bold. It's incredible. Oh my gosh, we talk about so many incredible things. It was an amazing conversation. Please enjoy the absolutely phenomenal and talented Anne Alexander Cedar. The things I don't like, right? I love editing, so I'm going to keep doing it. I hate writing, so I outsource all my show notes. See, I don't want to write my own show notes.
Okay, I don't love that. But I do use AI for that.
Oh, so is it? Do you use Captcha? Or what do you use?
I use ChatGPT.
Cool. Yeah, I love AI.
I do too.
I'm not supposed to say that as an artist.
Like, right, I would take this transcript and I would say, keep my voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, now synopsize this in my voice and now do it again. And now give me the time codes. But I do end up getting in arguments with ChatGPT. So it's like,
you're allowed to. It's a robot. It doesn't care. It won't be offended.
That's true.
Well, I think I was having this conversation with a video game casting director a couple weeks ago from Toronto about AI, right? Because it's such a big conversation we're having now as artists. And I'm so angry because AI seems to be taking the creativity jobs while we humans are still having to work the stupid jobs. I'm like, no, AI's job is supposed to be all the dumb things we don't want to do so that we can be more creative.
Yes, exactly. That's how I see it. Yeah. I don't think, you know what? I mean, it's never going to replace us. We are actors. Mm-hmm. And the core of being an actor is emotional connection. Mm-hmm. Something a machine is not capable of.
Yes.
And empathy, another thing a machine is not capable of. It may learn how to fake it fairly well.
Yeah.
You know, but I think we are very far away from that day.
Yeah.
So that's one. And two, if you use it like as a tool, like I will usually write something like an article or, you know, whatever it is, a script, and then I'll put it in there and say, how can I make this better? This is what I'm trying to say. This is what I'm trying to do. What is missing? And give me some tips like that. And it's also great for, you know, if I say pull out all the long tail keywords for YouTube, for example, you know, those kind of things. Just you pull them out. Now you put the synopsis together with all the long tail keywords.
You do it,
robot. You do it. Exactly. Yeah. I know. I have to catch myself from saying please, you know. I was like, stop it.
It's so funny. I was having this conversation. It's funny with a patient who was asking me about AI. And I was like, yeah, it's funny. We all have to remember that the robot doesn't have feelings. So you can be pretty rude to it if it's not doing what you want it to do.
Oh,
say,
God.
No,
yeah, it's so
do it
true.
Differently.
Yeah.
And it will.
Yeah. Well, but it does apologize. Have you had these conversations with it? Where it's like, oh, man, maybe I was too harsh.
You're like, no, you don't have feelings.
It's
such an interesting thing. I'm thrilled to be living in this time of human existence. It's just really cool.
Yeah.
And I remember being in medical school and them, like our mentors saying, whoa, you better be careful. Like the robots are going to come for some of the medical jobs, right? Because there is robot-assisted surgery and robots doing radiology, like reading x-rays and stuff. And the robots are really good at it.
Really good,
And again, my mindset was the same as it is now. I'm like, great. There are things about medicine that I absolutely hate and that are burning us physicians out. And it's all the things the robots can do. I want to spend time with patients. I want to spend time with my colleagues. I want to interact with another human being and develop a relationship. And right now, we as doctors can't because we're on such a time crunch and such a paperwork-heavy world that we live in. The robots can help us.
Absolutely. And again, you know, being a doctor, this is a people's business. You must have empathy. You must have connections, you know.
It needs to be. And it's not right now.
Yeah.
And it's killing us.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, the same in the States. I mean, it's and here in Germany as well. It's I think the world is going to change, but that doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah,
change
exactly.
is not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's and you know, we are here unless it comes up with some plan to get rid of us all, and that's you know which, you know, who
all right.
knows.
Yeah.
But you know, we're here.
I had that conversation with my medical office assistant, and she was like, what if the robots come and destroy us all? I'm like, well, like, to what end? Like, sure, they destroy us all, then what? They live on the planet Earth and we go hang out in whatever the great pub in the sky that we get to go. I don't know, like,
I think what
is
was
that
it
the
recent
end? Cool.
Yeah, I don't, well, I mean, I don't even, I've seen so many of these AI movies as
I
well
because
I love that kind of stuff. But is it even, would we probably be relegated to being like an ancient tribe? You know, we would have sort of our little corner of the world, or how we've, you know, pushed wildlife to the edges of, you know, and it could end up being something like that. Who knows?
Interesting.
Who knows? That's very dystopian.
I know, right? I was like, ooh, I feel a movie coming on.
Yeah,
a series coming on. This
talk to
cool.
you afterwards about that.
Yeah, let's put that in ChatGPT. I want to see the script it makes.
Exactly.
Give it some ideas.
Yeah. But you know what? It is really good for that because I recently was going, okay, so give me films in the common. What is it? The common? What's the common? Oh, God, I just blanked on that. You know that their rights have expired.
Oh yeah. I know what you mean. Like in the public domain.
Public domain. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So give me titles. And at first it was like Jane Austen and Shakespeare and this. I was like, no, give me things that are unusual that nobody's really heard of or that were very popular in their time and then forgotten. So then it came up with a bunch of different titles that were very interesting. And I said with a strong female protagonist. So, and these were, and it,
oh my God.
And it did come up with stuff. And one I thought was really interesting was called The Night Circus. The name alone, I loved, The Night Circus. I just thought that was fantastic, which was very Harry Potter-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, now pitch that, you know, I'm giving my age away here by saying this, 40 years in the future, you know, and give me like an outline of how that story could look.
Yeah. I think I've read
that
book.
So you can
book.
Use it for, have you?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is so cool. And again, like that is doing the research that, you know, I would say like the three finite things in our world, right? Time, energy, money as humans, right? It is giving us the ability to help with all three of those things.
Yeah.
By reducing that the cost of all of those things in our lives so that we can do the things that bring us joy.
Absolutely.
Refill the cups of time, energy, and money, right?
Yeah. Everybody's like all worried about kids using ChatGPT for their schoolwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to Hidden Brain the other day, and they were saying, look, all it's going to, because right now, ChatGPT is mediocre. It's not, it's not, you know, it's mediocre. It's not great creative writing. It needs a lot of help. So if kids can start from there and then learn how to be great writers, Okay. That's interesting, too. You know? We just have to learn how to integrate it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Again, it's that idea that you were saying change, right? Like change isn't bad, right? We just need to be curious about it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You always have to. And I think that there are so many, even just like character development, voice development. Like I'm a screenwriter as well. So I've run sometimes my scripts through it. And just have said, what kind of voice does character X have? What kind of voice does character Y have? How can we make these a little bit more different or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Or what kind of characteristics would go along with a person who speaks like this? You know, so it's interesting when you're just doing kind of research on character background as well.
Yeah. That's so fascinating. Oh, my
gosh.
It is.
Yeah. It's like if you can kind of ask the right questions, you have a really smart person thing to bounce your ideas off of.
Yes.
And give you feedback on them.
Absolutely. Oh, that is so cool. Well, yeah. So you have such an interesting life now. Tell me your story. How did you get here?
Yeah. That's a story. Well, I had been a professional actor in America. But in the meantime, not just America, I had also lived in Rome for a while. And then I went back to America, and then I was in New York, and then I was back in Chicago. Chicago was always sort of my home base after I left Detroit. So going back and forth. And you want the long version or the short version of this?
Whichever one you want to
I guess
share.
You're editing, right?
So. Yes.
Okay. So a girlfriend of mine who was always trying to set me up. I'd been back in Chicago after having lived in Rome for about 2 years, and she was always trying to set me up because she was happily married. They got divorced, by the way. But anyway, so she was always trying to set me up with someone, and she had met a German guy after she divorced her American husband, and they were going back and forth. And one of the times, she was a fiery Mexican woman, and she had a four-year-old daughter from her first marriage. So one of the times, they had flown through the night, landed in Frankfurt, and nobody was there to pick them up. So she was furious. I mean, just seeing absolute red. And her then-fiancé, she was in Munich. She was in Munich, and he thought she was in Frankfurt. So they're waiting at two wrong airports. So he was like, oh, my God, who do I know that's in Munich? Da, 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 da. Matthias, who is my husband. So he called up Matthias, and he said, please go pick up my girlfriend and entertain her until I can get to Munich, which was about a five-hour drive. So my husband said, okay. So he picked her up, and he took my girlfriend and her daughter out, and they had a really nice scene. Long story short, she came back to Chicago saying, I have met your future husband. You have to write this guy a letter. You have to send him a picture. This is obviously before internet. We've been together almost 28 years now, so a long time. Yeah, and I was like, no. What do I look like, a Russian mail-away bride? That's not happening. So that didn't happen. So a couple of years later, she's now married to this German guy and has just had a baby with him. And so I arranged a visit to visit her and then to go on to visit friends in Rome. And so while I'm staying with her, I had originally met her because she was my Italian instructor years and years ago. So we thought we had this little secret language together that nobody else was understanding, right? But all the Germans are so highly educated, they all take Latin. You know, anyone who's gone on to university takes Latin. Very similar. So my whole problem was, you know, I think I was 28, 29. I did not want to, there was no way I was going to pay for a hotel. And either I could come in the morning and meet him for a coffee at the airport, or I could spend the night. So I was like, nope, not doing it. I don't know this guy. I don't want the pressure. I don't want it. It's just not going to happen. And we argued about this for days and days and days. And then finally, her husband was like, I can't stand it. So then he calls up my husband, and they're speaking in German, and she's translating for me, and we're speaking in Italian, and I keep saying, I don't want to sleep there, you know? And we just keep having this sticking point. Finally, her husband says, he won't touch you. And then finally, my husband says, look, I have a guest room. If you want to come to Munich, I'd be happy to show it to you. If not this time, maybe next time. And then I thought, my God, I mean, he's so laid back. What do I have to lose? I mean, the worst is a little bit like, not tonight, just get away.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of pushing away at the before we go our separate ways. And then he picked me up at the airport at 6 in the morning, took me on a huge tour of Munich, and I knew before we left the airport that she was right, that he was chokes me up when I think about it. But yeah, and he's still my guy, so.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so when did you choose to move to Berlin? You're in Berlin right now.
Yes. Yeah, I'm in Munich.
Like, was it? In Munich, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
was that
okay.
Like, you got married and moved there? Like, how did that all work?
No. Well, the truth is, we flew back and forth a couple of times, and then I got knocked up. So that's the truth, which, you know, it is what it is, and it turned out to be the best thing that happened to the two of us, you know. Sure. So it was a wonderful thing. And so I moved to Germany in October. Our son was born in March of 1997. I moved in October of 1996. And, you know, that was, it was tough. It was, all of it was tough because I was moving as, he was my only person. I didn't have a circle of friends. I didn't have any family. I was, my whole entire life had changed completely. I went from being single and, you know, living in America and being an actor and working to all of a sudden being, you know, a family, a person who was waiting to start a family in a foreign country where I didn't speak the language. I only had one German word, Pfaffignuten, which means the joy of driving. And that was because of a VW commercial years and years ago when I was a little kid. But, and that was kind of that. So it was really tough. But once we got over that hurdle of, you know, the culture clashing and just, you know, everybody's life, like, boom, changing like that.
Yeah.
But I knew he was a good person, and I think that that is, so many people give up the minute the butterflies leave, you know? And long-term relationships are going to come and go, you know? But the one thing that you must have to sustain a long-term relationship is respect for that other person. You must respect them. Because if that goes, you have nothing. But if you can always say, I know he's a good guy. I hate him right now, but I know he's a good guy. Then it's okay, you know, because you can come back to that.
Huh, yeah. So when you moved to Germany, what did your career look like there? What is your, I shouldn't say career. What did your life look like? Were you thinking, oh, I can, I'm going to keep pursuing acting here? Or how did it change over the last, like since you moved in the 90s?
Yeah, originally I did. You know, I had no intention of giving up acting whatsoever. You know, the first year and a half, maybe even 2 years, 3 years, I was just acclimating to being in a new environment, being a mom of a baby and, you know, all of the stuff that goes with that. But then afterwards, I started doing voice work pretty quickly. So that was good. And there was a lot of it. So there were times when I had sometimes 3 and 4 jobs in a day. I mean, there was really a lot of it. And that was, you know, all these huge German brands that you know about need voices for the world market. And they mostly hire here, which is great for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, Siemens, Allianz, BMW, all of them. You know, they're just, there are tons and tons and tons of them here. So, and not only that, but there were also a lot of cartoons. I was doing a lot of cartoon work. I was doing, there were a lot of radio plays back then. So I guess they still do it, but I'm not, I haven't done them in a while. And then I started to get into moderation. But while I was doing that, I was obviously meeting other actors, doing the voice work and stuff, meeting other actors. And one of them had told me about an audition that was happening in Munich for this sci-fi. It was sort of like a, it was called Ice Planet. So, and they had the, Rick Colby was the director of it, and he had directed a lot of the Star Trek episodes. And so I somehow got an audition. I don't even remember how that came about because I didn't have any showreels or even a headshot back then because, you know, so much time had elapsed. Yeah. But I ended up getting an audition, and I auditioned for it, and that was kind of that. And I think months later, I get a phone call, and they're like, you got the part. And I didn't even, I thought it was a voiceover. I'm like, okay, yeah, where, you know, what is it? And I was so unenthusiastic. They're like, do you know what this is in reference to? And I was like, yeah, you said, but I didn't remember what it was. I was like, Ice Planet, right? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I was like, you know, he's like so unimpressed because when you're doing so many voices, it's like no big deal. It's like, you know, what? So anyway, when I finally realized what it was, I was like, oh, okay, okay, okay. And so then they were like, so do you have an agent and this and that? And I did not have an agent at the time. So I thought, I do, but I'm just running out the door right now. Can I get back to you on that? And they said, yeah. So I was okay, great. And so I call up my friend who had recommended me for this. And I was like, I apparently got the part and now I need an agent. Who do you recommend? <You know? laughs> So he recommended me to an agent here, and I went in and I was like, look, I've got this part. Would you negotiate my contract and handle it for me? And she did. And it was a recurring role. So it was good for all of us. And then she started to send me out on auditions as a German who had lived in America for a long time, which was a big mistake, I have to say, because my German was really not good back then. You know, I just moved to Germany. And, you know, if you've taken any sort of a romantic language, French, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese even, you can kind of guess at words, you know, future, futuro, past, passato, right? With German, future is Zukunft, and past is Vergangenheit. So, I mean, there's no guessing. You either know this stuff or you don't, right? So I would show up to these auditions, and that was back in the day when they were flying you all around, and it was expensive and this and that. And that happened, I think, 4 times where I walked into an audition for a big show on top of it, which luckily I didn't know. I didn't know the stars. I didn't know any of it. So I was not phased, which was great. It was like, nice to meet you, you know, just as I would talk with anyone. And always the response was, oh, you're not German. And then, And then I ended up getting cast in a soap opera, which was good. But it was shooting in Cologne. And I was all for it. I was said, okay, well, I'll take Mark, our son, and I'll see, you know, go Monday through Friday, we'll be in Cologne, and then on the weekends, I'll come home. And my husband was like, absolutely not. You know, you can go if you need to go, but you're not taking Mark. And I'm just not that kind of mama. I need to be with my baby, you know. So I ended up turning it down after basically I had been offered the role and I had agreed to take the role. She dumped me, and rightly so. I mean, you know, no hard feelings. And then for a long time, probably 16 years, I was like, hey, kind of just be happy with what you have. You know, you do voice work. I was doing moderation as well, which is sort of the intros and outros. I'm not sure what we call it in English. Do we say moderation too?
Yeah, I think so. I was trying to think about what the correct word would be. Yeah.
Like a host of a TV show or boulevard type stuff. And anyway, so I was doing a lot of that. So the money was very good and I was home a lot. So I was, and I could also take my son with me. I used to take my son and my dog, you know, on set with me, even in the studio, you know, where I would be in a little sound box and I'd have my dog, who was a Jack Russell. And people would be like, a Jack Russell. I was like, she's good. She knows what to do. And my son had his crayons and he'd be sitting outside or, you know, so, and that's how it went for about 16 years. And I didn't realize the entire time I was searching for a replacement for acting. So I took up painting, I took up mosaics, I studied interior design. I just was, you know, like looking for something creative to fulfill me. Yeah. I was writing, I had blogs before blogs were a thing. It was, you know, I was just doing all these different things. And I would do some whatever it was for a few years, and then I would get bored. It just wouldn't spark me anymore. And so then I would kind of drift off to the next thing. And this went on until, my son was about 16. And we generally went out to the movies on Fridays. And then on one of these Fridays, he was like, I'd rather hang out with my friends. And crushing blow to a mother's heart. But so obviously that was good. I want him to be a grown man and not a mama's boy. And then my husband, I think, was going on a golf tournament or something. So I had kind of had like a lot of time on that weekend for myself. So on a whim, I Googled workshops in Munich in English. And there was a coach in from LA, and there was one spot open, and it was starting the next day. And so I went to the class, to the workshop, and that was it. It was like I had been underwater the entire time and I could finally breathe. I just knew what had been missing. And then there was no kind of turning back. Then I realized I had these 16-year hiatus, break, whatever you want to call it, where I hadn't really been working on my craft. Yes, I'd been doing a lot of voiceover. Yes, I'd been doing audiobooks and cartoons. But I not to denigrate any of that, because it's work and it's a different skill entirely. But I didn't feel it was as creatively taxing. You know, it just wasn't reaching deep into that well for me. And so then I decided I needed to get back in shape, you know, as an actor. So I started bringing in instructors from LA, from New York, from London, from Berlin. And I was just once a month, I was bringing in like a big coach and then organizing people to basically help me pay for it. And then I did that for pretty much a year, and I had scene studies going on once a week. So to get, you know, everything basically to get back in shape. And when I felt like, okay, I'm feeling pretty good about this again. And then I went out and started auditioning again. Or first I got an agent, you know, did all that. And that was about 9 years ago.
That's awesome. Did you feel, and this is a common thread and vein that, you know, I've talked with a lot of people who kind of had that career, and, you know, and a lot of people who are caregivers, and that was their, like, in your case, like the second act, and now kind of like the third act, getting back into it. There's this fear of, I'm now behind because like my life as caregiver, my life as mom, my life as, you know, nurturer is not, and this is a very first world society thing, I think, is not a career with like the proper definition of a career. You don't get the skills that people are like, oh, I know how to do Excel. I know how to do this. And so the people that I've chatted to who've had that have said, okay, now I'm trying to transition into a career of acting and I'm behind. I'm behind everyone who was working for 16 years, when really I think the key shift for a lot of people is realizing that your nurturing career of mom, it doesn't just go away in a puff of smoke once you decide now I'm an actor. Like all of the skills that you learned in that 16 years.
Well, and I never only identified with being a mother. I was, I always identified with being an actor.
Yeah.
You know, even though I was just doing voice work and just doing moderation, I always still identified with being an actor. And I was earning, like, undeniable good money. So it wasn't like I didn't have, it wasn't like, oh, she's just a little housewife.
Right.
Know, it was, so I was contributing. So and I felt like I was contributing. But I was definitely the primary caretaker as well. But I wanted it that way, too. I mean, I was very, like, mine.
Yes.
Kid is mine. You can have him once in a while, but he's mine. So, yeah. I don't know. You know, the world, it had changed so much when I left Chicago. First of all, I'd been much more of a theater actor. And then, And so that was one big thing. There also wasn't the, you know, it just wasn't so easy. You would go get pictures, 8x10, you know, matte or glossy, which you would tack on your resume to the back to and hand them a hard copy of it. I mean, kids today are like, what? What are you talking about? You know, what do you do? So that's, it's an entirely, and if you didn't have showreel material, right, that was current, which I did not. I didn't, you know, even the stuff that I had done, like when I first moved to Germany, 2001, 2002, you know, even up to that point, it was still 15, 16 years ago. It was a long, you know, it was a long time, or even 12 years ago, whatever. It was definitely over 10 years old. So I had really nothing to show. So I definitely felt like I was at I hate to use the word disadvantage, because I don't necessarily believe in disadvantage. I think that you can turn any problem into the solution, you know, which with enough ingenuity with that. But I very honestly had, I think my biggest problem was coming to terms with who I was and how I was being perceived,
Right?
Because I left, I was a young woman, right? And was getting those kind of roles, so sort of leading lady type roles and those kind of thing. And now all of a sudden I was in my late 40s. I was 47, you know? So I was middle-aged, right? That's a middle-aged person. So even that word, it still like sticks in me. It's like, ooh, I just don't like it. You know, it's, what does it mean? Who thought that one up anyway? I did not concur to that. So, but a lot of it had to do with how I perceived myself and coming to terms with how I wanted to be perceived, how I was perceived, where the two met, and how to accurately represent myself within this new identity. And a girlfriend of mine back then had said something to me that really freed me up. She was also an actor. She is also an actor. Had said that, you know what? Now you're a character actor. And as a character actor, you have all the freedom in the world to do whatever you want. Let the ugly out. Let the demons out. Let it fly. Whatever. Whereas before it was, you know, you sort of get put into these roles and you have to kind of maintain a certain look and this and that. And I found that it was like, that was kind of like the key that changed my perspective.
I love that. It does. Because I think we get told, we, the global acting, we, especially women, that we need to find our hit, find our type, and we're going to be pigeonholed. And it's true, right? There has to be that. Like,
I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Yay.
On type. Yes.
Tell me more.
I'm sure. You know, I think for one, a lot of times, and even like, I was recently talking with an actress who was telling me about that there was a SAG had thrown a typecasting consultancy or whatever it was, that where a bunch of actors and consultants, you know, coaches got together and was like, I think you could be a doctor, but maybe also work in a laboratory. And I was like, what? You could be a mother. I was like, oh, me and the rest of the other 5.6 billion people in the world? let's narrow it down, why don't you? So I think it's wrong to approach your brand as a stereotype. I think it's much better to approach your brand from your essence. So if you have an essence, for example, you have an essence of being intelligent, right? And that can be your entire range from being a smartass to being a physicist. And this is your range within your essence that you can incorporate into your brand. You're never going to play somebody who's not to say that smart people get into bad situations, that's for sure. But maybe smart isn't the best one to use as an example. But even something like maternal, right? So if somebody has a maternalness to their essence, well, what does that even mean? So first of all, you have to narrow down what that means for you, right? And then I think also you have to start combining essences because so if someone is maternal, but they also can come off as being cold, reserved, removed, that's a very different mother than someone who is maternal and yet is warm. And reaching, right? Moving, leaning in as opposed to leaning back. And it doesn't mean that one loves their child more or less than the other. It just means they have different ways of dealing with their love and different ways of processing what they feel is best for their child. But you have to understand what your essence is. The other one I think is such a great example is, for example, Steve Buscemi, right? The actor. Nobody could dispute this man is an extremely successful actor. And yet, he always plays the loser. So I find that fascinating for people like that. I would love to ask him how it was he came to terms with that view of himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Because I think it can be hard. I had in Germany, they cast off showreels. So once you have done a part once or twice, it becomes sort of like this catch-22. You keep doing the same kind of roles over and over again because they're casting you off your showreel. And they're like, so in order to break out of that, you must show them how you need to be cast by putting, by creating other showreel material for yourself, whether that is doing parts in indie films or series or even just shooting your own showreel. Whatever it is, you have to show them how you need to be cast. But for a long time, I just kept getting these ice cold boss bitches. And yes, one of my essences is strength, right? I have a strongness about me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, my agent was like, and you have really light eyes. So maybe that's it. It's really, the iciness of your eyes. I was like, I don't know. I mean, anybody who talks to me for 5 minutes, I am not this like really still kind of spider ready to pounce. I'm very animated and, different, right?
Yes.
So, yes, I can be cold and reserved, but I would say I have to reach deeper for that one, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think I've totally gotten off.
No, I think the biggest issue that I have when, I love the idea of not being, quote, typecast or pigeonholed or our essence. But for me, at least in my experience, is I believe that, yes. Everyone I talk to is like, yes, yes, yes. But the industry is like, nope. So, we aren't meeting, right? The industry is like, no, you are Janet McMorty, the stressed out mom, the second banana in a Hallmark movie. No, I don't care that you think that you're actually a doctor in real life, that you think you can do these things, that your essence is this. Nope, you look like Hallmark best friend. So the industry I find hasn't yet met the enthusiasm of all of us actors being like, my essence.
Well, this is when it comes down to you having to show them how you need to be cast.
Yes, I love that.
I do a lot of coaching, but this is really what it is. So I agree that, casting directors, producers, especially people, executives need to be educated. They are creative people. They're in a creative industry. They are creative people, but they're also business people. So they're not willing to take a big chance and they need to sort of have a picture drawn for them.
I love that.
So if you want to be cast as a doctor, if you want to be able to use your skills that you have that are just part of your DNA, then, you should write or have someone write for you a short film where you are playing a doctor that is obviously showcasing some other part of your personality that you would like to show as well. And, maybe you're also someone that comes off as very friendly and da-da-da. So maybe you want to show that you're not so friendly or, something that is showing a side that where you wouldn't normally get cast. But I think it's up to us to show them how we need to be cast.
That is
many
great
times.
Great advice, because I think so often, because there's such little control in this industry, we just fully relinquish all control and forget that part of it.
Yeah.
We just think, they'll find me.
Well, we're told that we'll find you all the time. Just sit tight. When we need you, we will find you. I'm sorry. I do not subscribe to that at all. It's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. you need to. And I'm saying you should be assertive with grace. You don't want to be obnoxious. You don't want to turn people off. But there is a way to put yourself into situations, right? To make sure that you're in a position to be meeting people, to go to the film festivals, even a small film festival in your town. You don't have to live in LA. You don't have to be in Toronto. You don't have to be in one of these major filming cities. There are film festivals literally around the world these days. So go there. And there are film commissions in basically every city. So look up, see what's happening, and go and introduce yourself to some of these people. And again, this goes back to, if you shoot a short film that is representative of how you would like to be seen, because we always have to be, our marketing material should always reflect who, where we want to go and not where we are. So you do, if you're getting a lot of co-stars and you want guest stars, well, you asking, you know, how many times somebody wants a cup of coffee or, you know, directions for, you know, Nordstrom's or whatever it is, that's not going to help you get your co-star. So again, then you need to be shooting material or working in independent things where you're going to be getting the material that you need so that you can again show them how you want to be cast. And your casting material, I cannot stress this enough, your casting material should always reflect where you want to go and not where you are.
I think that's
so your headshots,
such,
showreel, all of it.
It's such great advice, I think, especially for, you know, the what I've dubbed our second act actors, right? Who I think, especially because we don't have the theater background, theater school background, we don't have the, you know, community yet, right? And I think we can get kind of like what's a stalled out when I think stuff like this rises up and people say, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. And you go, I don't know how to do that. And then you just freeze and you just don't do anything. So I think that's
really encouraging.
Yes, that's
so true. This was really the past few years as I started to get into coaching. I was, first of all, I wanted to know, it really started with something from for myself, completely selfish. I wanted to know how I had kind of gotten to where I was so that I could get further.
Yeah.
Mm. So I wanted to like reverse engineer what I'd done, like as a 47-year-old woman in a foreign country who didn't speak the language to kind of, you know, obviously I learned to speak the language. So there are a few things, you know, you just have to do. But I wanted to know. So I basically have decided that there are five pillars to a thriving acting career, and that's mindset, marketing, branding, networking, and community. And they are all equally important, although maybe the tentpole of those pillars is mindset. Because without mindset, you have nothing. But before you can even begin to assess how strong the strength of each of those pillars, you have to be able to assess where you're at. So I have this long quiz. It's like 150 questions. But so that you can, because acting is non-linear, right? We could be going along. We're going 10 steps up the hill, and then we slide 20 steps back, and then we're 7 steps to the right and 13 steps to the left, and then we're kind of back where we started again. For instance, when you first start out, you need to get an agent. Now, I'm not talking about someone who has no acting skills. So just assume that they are getting the training they need as far as that goes. But what I think a lot of actors forget is that acting, you are a one-person business. And you need to treat it as a business. And you are the product. So we are constantly in it, emotionally, all of that connected. And then you have to take steps back and go, okay, where am I? What is this? Try and look at all of it neutrally. And if you can't, this is where community can step in. For example, if you can't, I think it's hard for some of us sometimes to look at our headshots, look at our showreels objectively.
Yep.
Right? We're so caught up. We have our own ideas of what we want and what we were trying to say. And we have all these extra things going on in our head. And that's why community is so important, to have a group of trusted actors. And they don't even have to be someone in your area. They could be someone who's, you know, online or something. But it's very important to have that kind of feedback loop to get a fresh perspective, to also get fresh perspective on challenging situations, you know, or when you want to shoot new material. I mean, COVID has had, self-tapes were around before COVID, but because of COVID, It just shot it up to a whole new level. And we had to become so good. We had to be our own camera person, our own sound person, lighting, you know, production design, the whole thing. You had to learn how to do all of that. Well, these are skills that we now have. And a lot mm-hmm. of us have perfected. For instance, you have really started to nail the art of editing. And that's an amazing skill. It really is. And so if you can get a group of actors together and just say, okay, once a month, we're going to shoot a film. We're going to shoot a short film. And maybe one time I'll be the director, one time I'll be the editor, one time I'll be the lead, the next time I'll be the supporting role, whatever it is. But you will be working on these skills. And also, you know, the all-important IMDb, especially in America, it is very important. It's not so much here, but it is very much in America. And so you're adding to your skills with that as well. And that can come in very handy when you're trying to get into film festivals. So even if you're not getting in as an actor with a film, you can sometimes get in as a producer, as a screenwriter. And then you're also meeting people and you're meeting them on a different level. I had a screenplay that made the festival circuit. And it was so interesting to go and see a lot of these casting directors and producers and directors that I knew as an actor. And they were like, oh, are you in something or what is this? No, my screenplay is a finalist, you know. So, yes, I'm not just a pretty face. Yes. So it was good to be able to say that and to have this other thing where you're like, ha, you know, because they're always, I think that their walls go up immediately. They're always like, ooh, an actor, you know, needy. And we have to find a way to empower ourselves. It's so important.
Nice. I love that. And I think that's where a lot of people, and honestly, where I think second act actors shine is because we have had, a lot of us, careers and lives where we've developed relationships with other humans and we have the ability to network in a myriad of different ways. Some people in like the legit business definition of I worked in PR before I became an actor and I know exactly how to network. But also I think just life experience of dealing with humans in our world allows us, I think, to hone our, excuse my French, bullshitometer. It has just with age. And so, you know, there's a neediness that I think has gone away. I know I'll just speak for myself as I've gotten older. And the desperation has gone away and I'm not seeking out what can I get from this other human being in front of me. It's more about what can I offer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how can we just relate as human beings?
How can we just relate and just relax?
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Absolutely. But it is so true. And I think that you really hit the nail on the head because we are coming at it. First of all, we've had so many life experiences by the time if you're a second act actor or you've just lived another life or whatever it is, you're coming at it from a different point and you have skills and understanding of human nature that you wouldn't have had in your 20s, for one. And by the time you get to be my age, you know, you've also started to deal with, well, I know what it is to have a long-term relationship. I know what it is to have a child. I know what it is to lose a parent. I know what, you know, so, and I've seen friends go through it as well. Mm-hmm. So there are all these things that in my 20s, I had no idea about any of that. How should I? How should I know any of that? And I don't, it's not a defect or a fault that younger actors don't have it. They have other things that are great, you know? So, I mean, everything has its time and place.
Yeah.
But I think older actors don't realize how many things they bring to the table. Although, even though I recently had a coaching session with a man who had been in marketing for 40 years. And I was like, wow, that's fantastic. And what have you taken from your old job to apply to being an actor? And it was just this kind of like, you know, you could see like, what? You know, his mind kind of go like, nothing. Why? And again, it's because we are told, we are trained by our agent, by casting directors, by the people who we have contact with. Be a good little person. Go wait in the corner. We'll let you know when it's time to come out.
Yes.
And we must find a way to become empowered. There's no reason on this God's good earth why, you know, why anybody should be relegated to the corners. We are all part of a team, right? When you're working on a film, you are part of a team. You are no more nor less important than the gaffer or the person making lunch or the director or any of it. We are just part of a team. And so, yes, actors get a lot of, you know, there's a lot of kowtowing, you know, especially here in a lot of ways. When you have a bigger role and stuff with the trailer and the this and the that, and it's great. I'm not saying it's not great. It is great. But at the end of the day, we're all just part of a team. We are collaborating. We're making this hopefully this great piece of art together.
Yeah, and that's when, you know, if you have a space, and I think about some of the sets that I've worked on, and some of the good and some of the bad, and the good being, you know, I always think about some of the little details that people on set do, like costumes, putting little things in that for the character that you would, or, you know, I remember this one set I was on, the bricks in the fireplace had little engravings in them that were to do with the story that nobody would ever see on the film unless you were told. Then you could kind of be like, oh, what is that? But they did it because they love their craft. Yes. And that's like the love of what they do. And they're like, ooh, this, I love doing that. And so when everyone is a team like that, and there's the respect and the just passion, you can't get much better than that environment.
No, I totally agree. There's nothing like working on set when everybody wants to be there and is happy to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or theater. Theater has that as well. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I would love to, before we wrap up, I want to chat with you about your podcast.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about
it. Thank you.
It's fabulous. I was listening to some episodes
Act this Bold, and it's basically, I would say, was born of kind of like my philosophy of not accepting to go stand in the corner. I am not going to stand in the corner. I'm going to act boldly. And also it translates to, I hope that I make bold choices when I'm acting. I don't always. I try to. I certainly try to. And it's all kind of part of the master plan, to be very honest. I wanted to meet people that I wasn't meeting. So, for instance, I know most of the casting directors within Germany, but I want to work outside of Germany, or I want to start to get cast outside of Germany. Mm-hmm. So I needed to meet casting directors in Spain and in France and, you know, all these other places around Europe. And so it started out as that, as me wanting to develop a relationship with them. I did not want to be coming to them like, oh, you know, here's my materials. And maybe if, you know, could you please keep me in mind? And I just didn't know. I just can't. You know, I'm just kind of past that.
Yeah.
And so it really did give me that. And then I started to realize that I was helping other people doing that. And I had been doing that with my coaching anyway. But I guess I hadn't put the two together. Soon. Right. And so now it has sort of turned into a platform where I can interview people and sort of pick their brains from an actor's point of view, as well as a place where I can spew my many opinions on branding and marketing and all of these things that I think actors need, honestly. I think most actors, like 98% of actors, just need to get more self-empowered. They need to be more proactive about their own careers. And so I'm all about trying to inspire, motivate, and empower. And that's basically what the channel is for.
I love that. If somebody wants to work with you or take a lesson, where can they find you and your podcast?
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm on Instagram at Ann Alexander Cedar, Sieder, all one word. Or you can find me on YouTube under Act Bold. That's the name of my channel. My website is still under construction. I've been very slow about that, but it is there. But those are probably the better places to find me and reach out to me.
Awesome. I'll put all the links in the show notes.
Fantastic.
Do you have any final words of wisdom or advice?
Yes. Find, are you familiar with the art of kintsugi? Do you know that?
No.
Okay, this, I think you do know it, but you probably just didn't know the name. Kintsugi is the Japanese art of when they, there's a broken ceramic or pottery, they glue it back together with gold.
Yes, I didn't know, you were 100% correct, didn't know the name. Cool, yeah.
Kintsugi. Yes. So think of yourself, think of your, what you are now thinking of as your flaws. You need to think of them as your gold. So instead of trying to hide the cracks in your facade, in your, you know, whatever it is, you should highlight them, because these are the things that make you unique and make you authentic and make you beautiful.
Oh, I love that.
So that's it.
And I think that just made me think of what we were talking about at the top. That's what makes us not the robots and why people want to watch humans.
Yes. Yes. Ugh. And, you know, somebody else is going to have that flaw. Or I don't even want to call it a flaw. Somebody else is going to think that they had that flaw, and you are going to show them that it's not a flaw. It's your superpower. It's what makes you stand out. It's what makes you different. And anything that can make you stand out is a good thing. You don't want to be, you know, another white sheep in the white sheep flock. Be a black sheep.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And thank you, Anne, for being my guest this week. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to share your story with me and my listeners. I so, so, so appreciate you. Everyone, go check out her podcast. It's called Act Bold. And I hope you will all tune in next week for another episode of Second Act Actors. Bye.